I am Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matters. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. The AMA is a global leader in professional development and education, improving the immediate performance and long-term growth of individuals and organizations. Check us out on our website, www.amanet.org. In his new book, Accelerate, management consultant Dan Coughlin collects his experiences from over 3,000 hours of executive coaching in over 20 industries. He distills them into 20 lessons for executives and managers looking to catapult their careers and grow their businesses. Dan is president of the Coughlin Company, a consulting firm specializing in business acceleration, working with companies such as AT&T, Boeing, Citigroup, and the St. Louis Cardinals. Dan, welcome to Edgewise. To get started here, can you give me some characteristics of a truly great manager?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that's been driving me for the last 10 years is what separates the great managers from the mediocre managers? And some of the answers have really surprised me. You know, I think the three things that stand out the most are, one, the great managers get plenty of rest. They don't overwork themselves. They're not frazzled. A lot of managers I'll talk to, I'll say, how are you doing? They'll say, I'm so busy. But the really effective managers say, I'm doing fine. How are you doing today? What are you working on today? They're very, very calm and relaxed. And that really plays itself out in an important meeting. When dramas are building up in the meeting room, the manager stays calm and it keeps the group to stay calm. Another thing they do is they're willing to say no. They can tell their boss no and they're comfortable saying no because they want to put their energy where it's going to matter the most. And the third thing that I think that great managers do is they operate at the intersection of greatness. And what I mean by that is they know what they're good at and what they're passionate at. They know what their organization wants to achieve, and they know what their customers want. And they put the vast majority of their time and energy they spend doing things they're good at and they're passionate about in a way that intersects with what their organization wants to achieve and what their customers want to achieve.
In your book, you talk about how managers set themselves up for failure in meeting their objectives. I mean, how does this happen, and what do they need to do to stay on track?
Well, the key when you're talking about execution and planning, what I have found is that people think they're superhuman heroes. These managers feel that they are superheroes, and they have to do more than is even realistically possible. So when they map out their plan for the next year, they have mapped it out, assuming that everything is going to go perfect, and it never does. There's always something that pops up. So what I suggest that managers do to enhance execution is first map out all the activities they're considering for their organization to do, sequence those activities, which ones make the most sense in a certain sequence, and then proactively sacrifice some of those activities. Because if you try to do everything you start out with on your plan, invariably you're going to run out of time. After you sacrifice, then put it on your schedule and be really maniacal about sticking to that schedule. Because what happens is people overschedule, then they start to make adjustments, which affects a whole bunch of people in their organization. Then it changes the whole plan, and before they know it, they're way off kilter. So sequence all the activities. Sacrifice until you're down to a reasonable number, and then schedule those activities that you really want to make sure get done, and then stick to that schedule.
And what about the challenges of getting the staff to deal with ongoing changes? What do you suggest managers do in the face of change?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the old saying that change is constant is constantly true. I mean, we are always in a state of change. There's not an organization that I work with or that I have worked with in the last 10 years who wasn't going through some major change in some area. The key, the difference between the really effective managers and the ineffective managers is the really effective managers answer three questions for their staff. They answer, what are we going to change from and why? What are we going to change to and why? And how are we going to make that change? The biggest problem that organizations face when they deal with change is the vagueness. When employees don't know why we're changing, why are we changing from this, and what is it that we're changing to, and how are we going to make this change, that vagueness creates anxiety. And it's the anxiety that eats up people's time and energy. So if we can explain, as a manager, what are we changing from and why are we making that change, what are we changing to and why are we making that change, and how are we going to make that change, what are the steps that are going to happen, then the anxiety goes away, even if people don't agree with the change.
Looking at organizational results, what are some of the mistakes people make in strategic planning?
Well, there's two mistakes I think that people make a lot when they get down to the point of focusing on strategic planning. The first one is what I called obsessed with the sizzle, bored with the steak. They're so excited when they come out of that meeting room. We have the strategy that's going to change our business. It's going to take us to the next level. But it's the steak that really drives the business. And what I mean by that is it's the day-to-day execution of the details of this big concept that moves a business forward. Too often what happens is there's a huge celebration when a new strategy is being rolled out and everybody is so excited. And then a month goes by and people wonder, well, whatever happened with that new strategy? Then 2 months go by and people start talking. 3 months go by and people are like, oh, well, I guess this is just going to be the same old, we're never going to change. So it loses credibility. Another problem with strategic planning that's connected to that is what I call the microwave popcorn mindset. And what I mean by that is people expect a strategy to instantly change results, that automatically customers ought to realize what's different and they ought to be attracted to us immediately. There's a terrific book that just came out called The Dip by Seth Godin. And what he talks about in there is you have to be willing to focus over the long term to be able to impact your results. So avoiding the microwave popcorn mindset is very important going into a strategic planning because you have to stick with it. I've done a ton of work for McDonald's, and one of the great things I've learned from McDonald's, the restaurants, is that it takes 2 years to establish a new brand in the minds of consumers or customers. Well, take that and apply that to your business. If you're going to stick with this strategy for 2 years, then you have a chance for establishing a brand.
Which takes us to the issue of strategic focus.
The key to strategic focus, and the one thing I talk a lot about when I do keynote presentations or seminars, is use the 1-3-6 rule. Here's the 1-3-6 rule. The one is, what's the one most important outcome that you want to improve for your organization? So of all the outcomes that you can impact, what's the most important outcome that you want to focus on improving? The three is, what three things can you do that would have the greatest positive impact on improving that one outcome? And then the six is, what six things do you need to stop doing so you have the time and the energy to do the three things that would have the greatest positive impact on improving that outcome? And I do this in seminars, and I do this in my executive coaching work, and the one goes great, the three goes great, but when people have to answer the six, they say, Dan, you don't understand. They'll say, everything I'm doing is important. There's nothing that I can give up because everything I'm doing is important. And I will say, I do understand that everything you're doing is important. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing it. But not everything is as important as everything else that you're doing. If you're not willing to give up something, how are you ever going to have the time and the energy to do the three things that would have the greatest positive impact on your most important outcome? So the thing that impacts strategic focus is use the 1-3-6 rule.
It seems to be a matter of prioritizing.
Very much so. Prioritization or priority management is really much more important than time management. Time management is when we say, here's my day, what is it I'm going to do today, and when am I going to do those things? Priority management is start the day with a blank calendar and say, what three outcomes do I want to have the greatest impact on? And how can I impact those things? And then schedule very carefully. Don't put meetings back to back to back where you're going to be exhausted. Just focus on what's the fewest things that I can do today that will have the greatest impact on my most important outcomes.
Let's talk about innovation. There's a lot of talk today about growing companies from within. I think the term is organic innovation.
Yeah, organic innovation. I love that phrase. Organic innovation, as opposed to buying up innovation from another company, how can we inside our own company right now innovate? This is a very important point, and one that I get tons of pushback on. I encourage your listeners to schedule time to think. Put it on your calendar. This is what the very best managers do. They put 1 hour a week on their calendar, and it's called thinking time. And you get away from your customers, you get away from your employees, your suppliers, your family, your dog, and you just sit down for 1 hour a week with a blank sheet of paper, and you, at the top of the sheet of paper, you put down what's one important outcome that we want to improve. Then you turn that into an open-ended question. How can we improve that outcome? Or specifically to your question, how can we add more value to our customers? Then you spend 45 minutes answering that question from your perspective, from your boss's perspective, from your customer's perspective, from your competitor's perspectives. Write down as many ideas as you can think of for 45 minutes. At the end of 45 minutes, go through your list of ideas and combine ideas together until you make even better ideas. Land on your very best idea and then take the last 15 minutes and schedule exactly what you're going to do to put that idea into action. That's how you put innovation into a working reality.
Today, most companies, of course, they're talking about growth, but at the same time, there's a shortage of talented, skilled workers. How do you staff for a growing company?
Staffing is really, talent management is what I call this, but talent management is really the fuel that drives the engine of corporate growth. One time I was at Nordstrom's and I had a great, great experience. I had several pairs of shoes I had just gotten polished. I had my three-year-old son with me. And the man behind the counter said, "Can I help you?" after I paid for the shoes. He said, "Sure." I said, "Sure." He said, "Let me help you with your bag." So he put the bag that I had of shoes under his arm and he walked through Nordstrom's, walked through the parking lot all the way to my car and put the bag of shoes in the trunk of my car. So the next week I went to the manager of Nordstrom's and I said, "Where do you find all these friendly people?" And she said, "Oh, it's our interview process." I said, "Really, what do you ask?" And she said, "Well, one of our questions on our interview process is, are you a compulsive smiler? And if a person doesn't break into a smile right away when they get asked that question, then they probably won't get hired at Nordstrom's." And I thought to myself, what a powerful point about talent management. When you're thinking about the types of people that you need in your organization to take it to the next level, write down the characteristics you want, the values you're looking for, the behaviors you're looking for, the technical skills that you want, and then create a list of questions, role plays, and case studies that will be specifically geared for that position. It's been my experience that way too often managers just come in with these standard questions that everybody asks the same questions. That's not going to help you find the right person for that position. So determine what you want and then create the questions, role plays, and case studies that will guide you to that person.
When we talk about growth, everybody seems to think that growth is the responsibility of senior management, to define it. What would you say is the role of the mid-level managers in driving growth?
This is a great point you're bringing up here. The role of the middle manager, the role of the top executive is essentially to clarify the strategy for an organization and to decide where to place their financial resources. It's the role of middle management to organize resources and influence people in ways that generate better, sustainable results for the organization's HPOs. And what I mean by HPOs is highest priority outcomes. So the job of a mid-level manager is to say, these are the resources that I have available to me, human resources, financial resources, technical resources, and so on. How can I organize these resources and influence people in ways that generate better sustainable results for the organization's most important outcomes? So a lot of times the advice that I give to managers is schedule thinking time. Step back and ask yourself the question, how can I organize my resources and who do I need to influence that's going to drive better results?
Dan, thanks for being with us today. Dan Coughlin's new book is called Accelerate. Now it's time for You've Been Spotted with Kevin Lee. It's where we interview random people who are attending a workshop or seminar at one of our 5 executive conference centers. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. Here's Kevin.
The AMA offers a variety of seminars focusing on leadership and executive development. Today at the AMA Center, I'm visiting AMA's Advanced Executive Leadership Program, taught by AMA faculty member Kurt Russell, to see what its participants are getting out of the program.
Well, I heard so much about the AMA and about the leadership courses that they offered, and I really was looking to enhance my effectiveness as a leader, and I felt like this course specifically, the one I chose, was going to facilitate having me be able to not only learn the concepts but actually be able to apply them to my everyday work life. Well, there's a lot of leadership perspective formulas that we have talked about throughout the time frame that we've been together, and I feel that Some of those I can actually put into use. And specifically, there's one called the learning process and how somebody actually starts with their being, then their thinking, then their doing, and then their having. And I think that was my biggest aha. I'm really excited to actually think about that part of the thinking part will actually bring apart the having and not really the doing all the time, but actually the thinking behind the doing. So you need kind of each of those components to be successful.
My expectations about coming here was to increase my strength in my leadership skills. And I think our instructor, Mr. Kurt Russell, has been done a dynamite job in doing that. And at the same time, I think our class has been there's a lot of interaction and involvement, so we've been sharing some good ideas.
Lots of great tools. Kurt's done a wonderful job. He's very well read on really all the key management and leadership books and so forth. So I've been impressed with that. Some key tools that I'm going to take back involve how I view the thinking, acting, the doing, and the action results, and how I'm going to be able to. He's got a model in there about influencing that I'm definitely going to be using in my endeavors going forward, and how to set up and influence upper management so that I can get more work done, be more productive. That's probably the biggest aha moment that I had. Kurt's done a great job of incorporating the AMA content with some personal experiences that he's had, which make it a whole lot more applicable to my job because of the realistic things that he's done in his career and how he's applied these management principles and what he's seen them do and work and so forth. So that's probably been one of the biggest advantages of taking this particular course. So I'd highly recommend it.
Well, I'm in field sales for a pharmaceutical company, so how I manage is somewhat different than the average manager that's in a workplace. I manage people off-site at different locations, so I feel like this information that we've actually learned and my applying it is actually going to be much more helpful in the challenging environment I have with them being at different locations. But applying all these different philosophies into trying to help my team be more effective and show leadership themselves as well as myself, I think will just bring the team bar to a high-performing team and much, much greater results. And that's where I see what I've learned, how it fits in.
It would be great to hear your feedback on this program, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.